So I'm going to be talking mostly about signatures of intermediate mass black holes. So this is obviously motivated by Barry's talk on Monday, where we have a model for forming intermediate mass black holes in AGN disks. And so this is sort of a little logo. This is actually Phil Armitage's simulation of forming a Jupiter. All right, but this is a picture that you want to keep in mind. Number of collaborators on this work. And I should say that we now have a paper that's been accepted pending minor revisions with a sort of a laundry list that I don't have time to go through in 13 minutes. McKernan, Ford, Coxis, Lyra, and Winter, 2013. And some of the Iron K Alpha line work is already out as McKernan, Ford, Coxis, and Hyman, 2013. And I'm also going to briefly talk about a new instrument that you're all going to want to use, I hope, on JWST. And so collaborators on that work are listed here. Okay. So basically, as you've already heard from many speakers, gaps and cavities should form in accretion disks, not just due to supermassive black holes, but intermediate mass black holes. I'll talk about why they form and then some of their signatures. I'm going to talk briefly about imaging prospects. And then I'll also talk about the signatures of embedded objects and intermittent events from IMBH, and also briefly about gravitational wave signatures. So, okay. Basically, we have a minimum condition for opening a gap, which is given in terms of the mass ratio there. This is from Phil Armitage 2010. There's sort of some different ways of calculating that numerical prefactor. But this is the minimum mass ratio. And you can see that basically it just depends on the aspect ratio and the viscosity. And if you look at that and you plug in some reasonable numbers for AGN disks, you see that an IMBH is the minimum mass that's going to open a gap of any kind. Also, you can see that a gap formation can be prevented by high disk viscosity or a geometrically thick disk. So just as a side note, even if you don't believe anything I say about IMBH formation, if you observe a gap in a disk, you have instantaneous constraints on the viscosity and aspect ratio. As you've seen from some of the wonderful simulations, gaps are mostly but not totally empty. And we can also say that the back wall of the gap is going to get irradiated since it's no longer opaque. The disk is no longer opaque there. And that's going to trigger some further structural changes. So you would expect that this back wall will puff up a bit. And then there'll be shadowing behind that as well. So as Meg already said, this is going to lead to some SED changes. And Kahan, Gulseken, and Miller have a paper out, 2012, very nice work, where they estimate the gap produced in the SED. They calculate some SEDs, assuming sort of a standard assumption that the width goes as 2 times the semi-major axis, and Q, which is the mass ratio of the 1/3. So you can see, somebody asked, I think it was Priya, you know, what's the difference between IMBH and SMBH gap? Well, it's the size of the gap. So if you measure the size of the gap well enough, you can tell what you have. This paper, Gulseken and Miller, they basically just look at what happens if you just take a chunk out of the SED, or a chunk out, annular chunk out of the accretion disk, and that changes the SED. Because that back wall is irradiated, that may swamp some of that gap, which may make things a little bit more complicated in practice. But from the protoplanetary analogy, again, you know, they see these gapped SEDs, and they have kind of the same situation, so we have some hope there. Spectral lines, which I'm going to spend a little bit of time on. Basically, the Iron K alpha line is a nice line that originates in the inner disk. And you can imagine what would happen if you took some chunks out of that disk. So this is a plot where we simulated using disk line, a disk with an inner radius of 6 RG, outer radius of 100. We're looking at a 60-degree angle. We have an emissivity profile. And we can put various gaps in the disk. And so the black line in this plot here is just the unperturbed disk. and this is relative flux scaling, and the spectral resolution here is AstroH. So basically you can see as you go from a gap that is wide and far out at 90 RG plus or minus 9, that's the teal line, and you can see that there's some difference. You probably can't see very well, but there is a little notch at the top. As you come in, you're going to see the notch move out into the wings. So this looks very good for detection with AstroH. I haven't put any noise in. You really need better collecting area by about an order of magnitude to see these notches cleanly. And that's if you have a gap, okay? If you have, as many people have noted, a cavity, so what's going on, right, is you've opened this gap, and the gap opener is now going to raise spiral density waves in the disk, and there's going to be unequal torques from that, and so you're actually going to run into type 2 migration, which is extremely fast. It's a tiny fraction of the orbital time. So these should all be gone very quickly. However, we observe planets, so clearly that's not true. They hang out. So there have been a variety of hypotheses put forward. Perhaps turbulence breaks these up and turns us into a random walk, which is why they get to hang around. Maybe we do form them and rocket them in, and then we form some more and rocket them in. But if you do have this torque, it's going to be forcing the object in, and the torque is arising from the gas disk. So obviously, once the mass of gas interior to your orbit is comparable to your mass, you're going to stop. There's not enough force to move you anymore. But the inner disk is still going to drain on a dynamical time scale, and so you will get a cavity that replaces the gap. If you still have a high mass inflow rate, then there's going to be pile up behind the gap, at the edge of the gap, pile up behind the cavity. If you just have a gap, I'm going to go back for a second, at a particular radius, you can imagine that the RNK alpha line is just going to cut off right here, and you're just going to lose everything that's interior to that. And that's going to be very, very hard to distinguish between an unperturbed line that's just up or down a little bit in flux. So that's bad for detectability. But if you do have this density enhancement here, then you might expect a little spike right next to it. Okay, so that could be a unique and useful signature. If you're not too worried about the RNK alpha line, obviously you're going to be missing a huge chunk of the big blue bump. So that would be good. For detection, you're also going to be removing a lot of short time scale variability material, so this could lead to a break in the power density spectrum. This could be a way to explain some of the liners. You remove the big blue bump by having something stall, drain the interior, and you're left with just what's outside. The RNK alpha line, though, basically is much harder to distinguish, with one sort of potential exception, which might even be doable with XMM if we're very lucky. Basically, if this is the scenario, which as a number of people have shown, if you get a secondary, if the secondary acquires a mini disk from leakage across here, it's going to create its own RNK alpha line, and that RNK alpha line is going to move around, and it's going to show up in the wings of what used to be the now cleared out wings of the primaries RNK alpha line. And so the wings of the RNK alpha line will seesaw red and blue on periodic, in a periodic way. Since all you care about is the red and blue wings, spectral resolution is not so critical. You just bin it up and look for a periodic variation. And collecting area is your friend, so you use XMM. Quick aside, as Barry mentioned, we shouldn't just go to their seminars. We should go to their instrument building sessions, and we should commandeer them as possible. So Imaging AGN disks and imaging protoplanetary disks is not a totally dissimilar problem. We would like it if it was more similar, but it's not quite. But we do have the same type of contrast problems. Our parsec scale disks at 10 to 100 megaparsecs are 2 to 20 milliarcseconds. Their AU scale disks at 10 to 100 parsecs, where they're very interested in finding things, 100 to 10 milliarcseconds, you know, it's factor of 5. And I do want to draw everybody's attention to this little thing. This is very little. It's about this big in real life. Okay. This is a mask that's going to fly on JWST as part of the NIRIS instrument. It's called AMI. And there's some details in Siva Ramakrishnan et al. 2012. But basically, you can take JWST and throw away 90% of the light that you are collecting with it. But for that cost, you will get half lambda over d resolution, 71 milliarcseconds. And so you can do imaging, and you can do decent contrast imaging. I'm willing to guarantee you 10 to 3, but we're still working, and we're still a few years from launch. We hope to be able to do better. This is Ford et al. 2013 submitted. Hopefully, it will be out before the end of the year. Here you can see our input models. They're just toy models. These little white boxes down here, these are 65 milliarcseconds. These are 71 milliarcseconds, just for scale. This is what we get out in our clean models or our restored models. Basically, it's an interferometer, so we're using interferometric, radio interferometric software to back things out. And you can see sort of long bars, rings, things like this. And you can get them out with no model priors. So you can also do this essential technique from the ground. And people are doing this, VLT, NACO, SAM, Keck. And there's sort of scope for getting better angular resolution from the ground even than this. But in order to get images out, you need to have a relatively informative model prior. This is done cold. So we didn't know what we put in. We generated something that came out, and it matches up pretty well. So in a messy environment like an AGN, where you don't necessarily know what the geometry is going to look like in detail, or you don't want to make certain claims a priori, space is really good for this. OK. There's a couple of other signatures that I'll mention. So embedded objects and intermittent events. As Barrett was saying, basically, if you start with a 10 solar mass black hole, so a stellar mass black hole, and you let it run around in the disk of an AGN for 10 mega years, you'll get 300 solar mass black hole at the end. So that may not be a gap opener if you have a large central mass. But they will still accrete, and they will peak in the soft X-ray. So retrograde orbits of small mass objects we found can persist for a long time. Certainly, we didn't really look at eccentricity. So if it's not circular, that may change. But because it's not encountering the gas, depending on how it passes through the medium, if it's not accreting very much, then it's not going to lose any angular momentum, and it'll just orbit forever. But the bow shock will generate soft X-rays as well. Obviously, if you have an IMBH hanging out in your nucleus, that is going to probably increase the rate of tidal disruption events. You may also see an underluminous type 1a supernova. Stefan Rosvog has done some modeling of this. And the IMBH would be expected to persist after the AGN phase, as long as it's not pushed in by type 2 migration. So you'll have IMBH hanging around in quiescent nuclei. And there'll be scatterers of low-mass stars. And just to mention gravitational wave signatures, these are going to be essentially ubiquitous. We expect pretty much any AGN can form these things. So the frequencies that we're looking at LISA. And for a signal-to-noise ratio of 10, you can detect them out to a gigaparsec, certainly. And that is just about it, my take-home points. There are multitudinous signatures of IMVH, but gaps and cavities are especially interesting, and the detection of a gap provides instantaneous constraints on aspect ratio and viscosity. Our problems for imaging are very analogous to protoplanetary disc people, so we should pay attention to what they're doing and borrow their instruments. And of course, some of these signatures I've discussed, you can extend them into the SMBH regime. I should have said the FEK alpha simulation I showed was for a mass ratio of 3 by 10 to -3. But you can imagine a bigger mass ratio do something similar. And the FEK alpha line is an electromagnetic precursor to gravitational wave merger event, because you're in the last tens to hundreds of years before the final end spiral.
Questions? Yes.
I have a couple of questions. So if we were to go out and look for these things in the SEDs, it would be good for us to sort of have a more concrete sense of what to look for. So I was wondering, have you considered looking at the statistics of how many of these we would see and in what part of the spectrum? You didn't really cover that as far as I could tell.
Sorry.
In terms of if they're from AGNs, and they have to be pretty far out in the disk. Is that where they normally would form? So it's that, would you actually see it in the UV or optical? Or would it be in the X-ray part of it?
No. You would see it in the UV. You see it in the UV optical. So basically, right, the idea is that if you have just a stellar, normal stellar population in the center of a galaxy, you'll have some stellar mass black holes there. And if you drop some gas on it, then it'll form a disk. And just, you know, just basically by a numbers argument, you'll have some stellar mass black holes that will be coplanar with the disk. And so those will move around, and they will run into other objects that will have circularized, and so they'll be low encounter velocities, and so they will tend to accrete those objects. So this is basically, we would say that if you have an AGN disk that persists for 10 mega years, you should be able to build a 300 solar mass black hole in any of them. The question becomes, does it survive? Or does it migrate in? And so if you're in the disk, you're basically, if you're in a lower mass object, that mass ratio is high enough. So 10 to the 6 solar mass black hole, that 300 solar mass object is high enough to carve a gap. So, you know, you would expect, you know, it takes 10 mega years to build that up. So how long? You know, at what point in the AGN phase are you? But you would expect these to be quite common. I mean, I would feel comfortable saying certainly at least 1%, maybe 10% of objects should show, you know, an object.
One per what?
1% to 10% of AGN should show, you know, twiddles hundreds to maybe 1,000 solar mass IMVH sitting in it. And so whether that opens a gap or not, depends on the mass ratio of the primary, you know, maybe 1% of objects should show some kind of dip in the SED. It's basically in the ultraviolet and into the blue optical. It depends on the orbital radius as well. So this is basically the problem is, part of the reason I can't give you a hard fractional number is that there are a lot of unknowns. But if we looked at a very large sample of SEDs, we should see some with dips. If we looked at 1,000 and we saw none, I would be concerned.
Okay, so maybe for the future or for a quick paper, maybe it would actually be helpful to our observers if we have like a concrete sample example so we can see, you know, what kind of signature and what amplitude, and you know.
Yeah, there is such a paper. Gultekin and Miller, 2012, has a, they have a great little plot. I may have it somewhere.
first author of the paper.
Yeah, so given the very simplifying assumptions we took, which Sevik mentioned, you know, 2D, and so you get two effects. One is a dip in the SED, that goes down and down and down, the wider the gap is, and then where the minimum in that dip occurs depends on where the gap actually is in there. And so for most of the mass ratios, it's rather subtle. And so the question is not detecting it so much as detecting it and knowing for sure that what you've seen is a gap due to, mm-hmm. or what you're seeing is actually a gap at all. And so we're very interested in iron line and other sort of light curve orthogonal methods of getting the same information. If they all line up at, you know, 2 sigma confidence, then we can say, all right, we found a gap then. Okay. Of course, imaging would be even better.
Okay, I'm told by the lunch people that I can allow only one more question, and I think I saw Priya's hand go up first.
I'll be around.
Just a quick comment that if you have flows through the gap, all of these signatures won't be so clean either, right? This is assuming that the gaps are very clean.
Yeah.
But if you have flows across the gap, which you do expect at some pretty low level, that would mess things up. I'm just saying that there are lots of real phenomena that are going to make it very tricky to come up with a very distinct signature.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree, right? There should be some flow across the gap. There are streamers, right? Even, you know, so, right, we say everybody's assuming they're completely empty, but if you go back to my title slide, that, by the way, you can ask me that later if you want. You know, so here's Villarmidge's simulation, that's not empty. But nevertheless, the protoplanetary people do see these signatures. So that's kind of my half answer, right? The mass flow rate is not high enough to totally defeat the absence of material there. Like, it's a pretty, you know, it can be a pretty big gap, especially at large radii. And unfortunately, actually, the gap will be much fatter at large radii because, you know, less competition from the central potential. And I would add, you know, another thing I think that's important to notice, you know, as Kyan was saying, you know, they just modeled it as an empty gap. You know, you might worry that there's some kind of absorption feature, but because the back wall gets irradiated, you're going to expect a little bit of a peak just adjacent to that. And so that, you know, that's a little bit harder to contrive some absorption model. So there's, you know, I think it's not impossible. It's challenging, but hopeful.
And on that note, it's lunchtime. Let's thank all the speakers this morning again.